Greetings, and welcome to Let's Talk About Books, baby, where we talk with your favorite LGBTQ plus authors. I'm Anita Kelly, and my guest today is Rebecca Thorne. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi, how are you doing?
I am well. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm so excited to be here.
Awesome. I'm so excited that you're here. This is great. We've never met.
Yeah, we haven't.
Yeah, this is great. So, yeah. So Rebecca, I hear that you have a book coming out called Can't Spell Treason Without T.
That is correct.
Can you tell us about it?
Yes. So Can't Spell Treason Without T is a cozy fantasy novel that was written after I read Legends and Lattes in March of 2022. And I self-published it in September of 2022. So about 6 months later, I self-published that book. And it is about two women who leave their intense fantasy lives to go and open up a bookshop that serves tea. Because I feel like we all have that goal in the back of our heads. One day we'll get to live that cottage core lifestyle and open up a bookshop or something.
Oh, yeah. Who doesn't?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't think there's a single person anywhere, especially in the LGBT community, that has not dreamed of that.
So. I know. You're right.
Yep. So I wrote that book just about these two women. You know, they're both very powerful women. It's very hard for them to leave their lives, but they decide to take the plunge and do it anyway. And it's just a book about them fighting to keep the life that they've created. So.
Okay. Wow. That sounds wonderful. So did I hear you say that you read Legends and Lattes and that was your inspiration?
Yes. Legends and Lattes it came at exactly the right time for me in my life. I was living with my parents. I had a series of failed housing situations that kind of just drove me literally back home to my last resort. Mm-hmm. And I read Legends and Lattes, and it was so low stakes at a time when I desperately needed something cozy. And I had never read anything like it before. So I've been exposed to the publishing industry for a really long time. And there was something very special to me about reading a book that was different than anything I'd seen being published in the past. Mm-hmm. And so it really kind of stuck with me in that way. And I was really excited to kind of dive into what this genre could be. And so when I wrote my book, I was trying to find ways to push the boundaries of low stakes without taking away the cozy. Because as much as I love Legends and Lattes, it's very low stakes. And that's perfect for a lot of people. But I'm someone who likes a little bit more. Like, I want a fight scene every now and then, but I also want to know it's going to be okay, you know? Mm-hmm. So I was kind of playing into that.
So by low stakes, you mean low angst for the
reader?
Yeah,
there's different definitions of what low stakes is for people. Mm-hmm. In general, I qualify it as easily resolved. Okay. So, like, you know, in, a lot of people will say, like, yeah, like in Legends and Lattes, there aren't any fight scenes. You know, like the character had a sword, but she never really picks up the sword and fights anybody. It's resolved through communication and a good cup of coffee. You know, like there, it's all about more of the human aspect behind, you know, just set in a fantasy setting. Mm-hmm. Rather than like the big wars and the assassins and the drama and the oppression that happens in typical fantasy books today. Mm-hmm. So it's more about that kind of vibe. Like, it's not so much you're going to have an entire war. It's, well, you're going to have conflict distantly, and then the characters are going to resolve it quickly and then curl up by the fire and talk about what happened.
Okay.
And that's kind of what cozy fantasy is.
Got it. I was wondering, cozy fantasy, I don't think I've ever heard that description before, but now I get it. That's awesome.
And yeah, it's a pretty new genre, so it's really kind of just getting its legs right now, which is really exciting to see because I'm involved in the traditional side of it and the indie side of it. And they're just these incredible authors from every aspect are kind of coming together to flesh out this genre in a way that we really haven't seen in a long time. Okay. So,
wow. Yeah, that's neat. So in Can't Spell Treason Without T, so T brings the coziness together. Is that it? Like drinking
tea?
So
they start their bookshop and tea house, and it does both, you know, so they have books along one wall and then they have a tea shop inside the actual building. Okay. But the treason of it comes in because one of the characters is a palace guard who is supposed to guard the queen. And the queen is a very like vindictive, murderous queen, very spoiled, very self-centered. And she considers it treason when one of her lifetime guards abandons her post, basically. So she kind of has to keep, you know, but because it's a fantasy world, there's no cell phones, there's no tracking. So she kind of has to use like spies to track where her people go. Mm-hmm. So they get away with it for a little bit of time. And then, you know, the queen comes knocking. So that's where the treason part comes in.
Okay. It's funny when you said, you know, there's no cell phones. I find myself when I read books or watch a show or movie that takes place, you know, pre-cell phone, like in my mind, I'm thinking, why don't just call them, pull out your cell phone. And then I'm like,
yeah, you think.
Yeah. It's like, it just is a natural, I think, reaction, you know? That's funny.
Yep. Yeah. The misunderstandings that we have in fantasy books are very difficult to reenact in today's world, which I think is why a lot of times when I have the choice between writing like contemporary fantasy or true fantasy, I'll go with just like a high fantasy, just to limit the technology a little bit and kind of get a glimpse of something more unique.
You have to be pretty creative too to resolve things.
Yeah. There's a lot of travel involved, a lot of, you know, like I think I added some messenger hawks in later books. Yeah. But for the most part, the queen relies on a very extensive network of spies. And that's kind of how I got around, like, oh, she doesn't know what's going on, but she does, because she has all these spies that are planted everywhere. So,
okay. All right. And when does that come out?
So that comes out on May 7th in the US and May 9th in the UK. So this was a pretty special re-release because I initially published it in September of 2022. Tor UK bought it first, and then Tor US jumped on board with Bramble, which is the imprint that is publishing under Tor in the US. So the US and the UK, because they coordinated together and bought the book at the same time, they're actually doing a simultaneous release, like re-release of it,
cool.
Which was coordinated to make sure that the UK readers and, you know, the Commonwealth readers don't have to wait too much longer than the US readers. But in publishing, it's pretty traditional that like in the US, books always come out on Tuesday, and in the UK, books always come out on Thursday. And I don't even think anyone really remembers why that is at this point. It's just the way it's always been done. So that's why they're 2 days apart, but it should all be coming out that week.
That's so great though. Like, there will be like limited spoiler alerts for the UK then.
Yeah. Well, and this book has been out for a while, so the ebook is available now. But the re-release, the hardcover, again, like I self-published it. So like I got a really beautiful cover artist. We did a really great job with the typography, but the quality of printing for the original copies is only what I could get on Amazon. And now a press is involved, and we have, you know, things like sprayed edges and gold foil, and it's just, and signed copies that, like, I just finished signing 3,000 inserts for the Waterstones version of this book.
Wow.
Which we're going to ship back to the UK. Yeah. So those books will all be, they're special edition ones that will all be signed, but I had to sign 3,000 Tippin sheets this weekend, which was really fun. So,
wow. So you self-published in 2022,
mm-hmm.
and did the publishing house call you and say, hey, we want to publish this, we know that you self-published, or did you contact them?
No, so it was a very odd set of circumstances. I actually had a different publishing house in the UK contact me directly and say that they were interested in buying it. But at the same time, literally the same week, I had randomly hooked up with a literary scout that apparently seeks to find big books in the US and then sell the rights abroad to those books. So that scout connected me with my current literary agent, Taryn Fajernas, and she was able to take that offer that we got in the UK randomly and negotiated into a four house auction. So wow. Tor UK won that auction. So they got the book. So
wow, good for you.
Yeah. It was definitely one of those, you know, I've been in publishing forever. A lot of my platform is educating on publishing and writing. So if anybody listening has questions about those things, feel free to check out my channel, because I talk basically about all of the pitfalls that authors can fall into and things to look out for and stuff like that. But this is what, you know, authors call the lightning strike. Like, you don't see this kind of thing happening hardly ever. And I was incredibly lucky that it happened to me. So
yeah, I was going to say the stars aligned for you.
They really did. They really did. Yes.
And so when you say listeners can check out your channel, what is that?
So on TikTok, it is Rebecca.Thorne, T-H-O-R-N-E. And then on Instagram, it is Rebecca Thorne Writes, I believe. And I post to both very frequently. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So I was checking out your history of writing, and it looks like last year you were super busy. You published three novels, is that right?
Yes, three novels and a craft book.
Can you tell us about that? About the three novels?
Yeah. So in writing, authors don't make money off of one book. And I think that's a pretty common misconception for new authors, is that they're hoping that it'll be, you know, one hit wonder and they'll make millions and be done. And that's not how authors make money. We make money off of lots of books. So I was always planning on doing a rapid release setup for the Tomes and Tea series, the Cozy Fantasies. And once they were purchased and I was not able to release books three and four in my expected time frame, I pivoted into releasing other books because I still wanted to make sure that I had that backlist so that when these books come out this year and everyone starts to learn about who I am, they have books they can go back and read that are in other genres. Because I didn't want people to just say that I'm a cozy fantasy writer. I want them to know that I'm, you know, a sapphic writer of all types. So the first book that I published was actually my MFA thesis, my master's thesis. And it was called This Gilded Abyss. And it's the start of a trilogy about two women who are trapped in a submarine, basically fighting a zombie virus. So the people in the submarine start to go crazy and kill each other, and they have to survive inside the submarine at the bottom of the ocean.
Wow.
And what's weird, I know. Well, and what's weird about that book is it released 7 days before Oceangate, before that submarine with all those billionaires last June.
Yeah.
So like I literally dropped the book and 7 days later that happened, and everyone was just like, how did you know that? And
how weird.
I was like, I didn't. It's just coincidence. But but I got a nice boost in sales for it.
Which
is great.
Oh, I'll bet.
So,
yeah.
So I was like, okay, I'll take it. So I'll be working on the sequel of that one here soon. Natalie Nottis voices the audiobook, and it's incredible. So if you're into audiobooks, that one does have one. The next book that I released is called The Day Death Stopped, and it is a contemporary fantasy that I wrote several years ago in a Good Omen style. So it's very like Neil Gaiman, Terry Pratchett. It's got very quirky sense of humor. It's got footnotes. It has the omniscient narration, but it tells the story of an alternate Earth where witches exist, and there's like one avatar like witch who rules over all of the other witches. So all the witches in the world have really stupid powers, like they get the best parking spot when they go to Target, or like they can always find the best watermelon, you know, but then like this one witch has like actual magic and can do anything that she needs, and they're basically like a pope for the witches.
Oh wow.
Yeah, and so in this book, the problem comes in when two of these witches are born. So two people to take over the throne instead of just one, and how that happens between the two of them as they play off of each other with this magic. So that book is actually going to have an audiobook releasing very soon by Moira Quirk. I still can't believe that I got her to voice that audiobook, but she wrote, she voiced Gideon the Ninth and several other bestsellers, and she actually agreed to record this book for me. So
that's so great. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. So that one is again still self-published, but yeah, the audiobook should be coming out soon, and it's absolutely incredible. It made my jaw drop. And then the final one that I released in December was a craft book about writing, because as I said, a lot of my platform is about the process of writing and publishing. Mm-hmm. So I was able to go in and I have this method that I use called the 5-sentence method that basically allows you to plot a book in 5 sentences, and it's going to be like flawlessly plotted. The pacing will be on point, and it tells kind of how the psychological structure of a novel should progress based on what our readers expect.
I was going to ask you about that. So can you tell us what are the 5 sentences?
So the 5 sentences, as I said, it's kind of derived from the Snowflake method. It uses a little bit of Save the Cat and another book that I love called My Story Can Beat Up Your Story. But it also plays off the 3-act structure as well. So there's a lot of inspiration to it, and I talk about that in the book. The 5 sentences are basically at the 5% mark, you have the introduction of the characters, the inciting incident, and that is the moment where the story kicks off. At the 25% mark, which is sentence number 2, you have the leaving home moment, which kicks off act 2, which takes up 50% of your novel. So the first 25% is that moment before they leave home. You know, 25% is when they leave the Shire and go on a journey. And then the 50% mark is the midpoint reversal. And that happens, you know, where it's everything that the characters thought they knew up until that point changes. So halfway through the book, there should be some kind of you know, information that's dropped, or some kind of like the villain is actually the hero and the hero is actually the villain kind of jaw dropping moment mm-hmm. that kind of changes everything we thought we knew. Mm-hmm. The 75% mark is sentence number 4. And that is when you are at the point of no return. So it's like the beginning of the end. Like you can't stop the train from going down the tracks now that this character has made a decision to continue pressing forward into what they need to at the end of the book. Okay. And that kicks off act 3. And then at the end, at the 95% mark, is sentence number 5. And that is the conclusion, which is basically the wrap up of how all of these events played together. Wow. So with those 5 sentences, they're really easy to come up with. You know, I take an afternoon for every book that I write and I come up with my 5 sentences, but I tie word count goals to each one to make sure that my pacing is on point. So for an example, if I know my book is going to be 100,000 words, my midpoint reversal, sentence 3, at the 50% mark needs to happen 50,000 words in. But if it happens 70,000 words in, then I know that my beginning is lagging and I probably should be deleting some things because people will say that the beginning is too slow. Hmm. So, yeah, so I explain all of that in the craft book. I go far more in depth. I use Pixar a lot as my examples because I think it's prime storytelling. They perfectly follow the structure in almost every great Pixar movie you can think of.
Really?
It's honestly amazing what they've done. You can watch Up, you can watch Finding Nemo, you can watch Toy Story, you can watch, and they hit every single one of these almost exactly the percentage they need to.
How about that?
To make sure that it works. So inside the book, I have a bunch of diagrams and things that break down a lot of these common movies and some really popular books to kind of show how the progression of this plot follows this structure. Because it's everywhere in Western storytelling. You know, it's what our society has been conditioned to expect out of our stories. And so when you play into it, your readers are happy because they get exactly what they're hoping for. So
do you see this in a lot of the books that you read, a lot of the fiction? Faye and Jonathan Kellerman, can you see it in there? Patricia Cornwell, yeah. That kind of thing.
I have been able to find it in pretty much every single book that I've read recently. But I will warn you, I'm a very slow reader. And most of my books lately have been at request of publishers hoping to get blurbs. So I haven't really had the chance to choose many of the books that I've been reading lately, but they've all been very enjoyable. Once you start to know what these sentences are, the more media you consume, the more movies, the more books, the more video games, you can see these plot points happen at exactly when you would expect them to happen. So it really kind of is like an analyzing hack, I guess. You're like interested in analyzing different methods and storytelling, it's really kind of a hack for that. So
yeah, it is. I've attended like a webinar where they talk about the arc. So mm-hmm. in your arc, like the 50% would be at the top of the bell.
Yep. That's okay. Correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So there's a lot of different ways to tell a story. And I always say this, it's like, you can learn this method. And I reiterate this in the book, you can learn this method and then decide not to use it. But knowing this method will help you understand how stories are structured and understand how to break the rules later on. Which I think is really a useful skill for authors. You know, like if you read The Day Death Stopped, it's hard to notice where that structure comes in because that is a story that tells 3 different characters' perspectives over the course of 30 years. And so there's a lot of time jumping. There's a lot of skipping around. It's not told. It's told very asynchronously. But if you look at like each character's storyline, I very clearly plotted out those 5 points for each of them and then just wove them together into some kind of story that fits.
That's great.
So yeah, it's really a cool method. I mean, I've really enjoyed using it. I don't really think that I'm the only person to come up with it, mm-hmm. but I do think I'm the first person to write a book about it, which was helpful for people. So yeah, I highly recommend it. I think, yeah, if anybody has the time, I have a lot of videos on TikTok about it that you can get basically all the information in the book. But if you want a more expanded version, the 5 sentence method is on Amazon.
Awesome. Great. We'll check that out. So I just want to go back to something you mentioned was that when you were getting your MFA, you did your thesis.
Yes.
And is that in creative writing?
Yes. Yeah. So my MFA is a master's in writing and publishing.
Wow.
So it's technically in popular fiction writing and publishing at Emerson College.
Great.
And I already graduated. I was chosen as the commencement speaker, which was very cool.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a really big honor. I was honestly shocked. So I got to fly out to Boston and speak. And yeah, it was a great program. I honestly didn't need to learn how to write by this point. I mean, Treason and Tea was my 15th book. So I've been writing for decades at this point. And mm-hmm. so I don't really like, and I've consumed a bunch of craft books and have basically learned how to perfect my writing style at this point. Like every book is different and every book gets better, but I know what I'm doing when I start a novel at this point. But I did the MFA because I wanted to learn more about the publishing industry in general. And I wanted to basically take my writing to a more professional level where I was treating it more seriously than I was before. Okay. So I don't think that an MFA is required for any author by any means. I think that it's very expensive. And I think it's basically just a pretty picture on your wall when you're done. But I also do think that if you have the money to do it and you're motivated, sometimes it's a good choice for people depending on what their goals are.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it can be, you know, I always think education is invaluable and it's something that you never lose. No one can take that away from you.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and again, like I was in a position where I could pay cash for this MFA and my ultimate goal with it is to teach in a college classroom someday.
Really?
So I needed to have, yeah, I would love to be a professor at some point. So I needed to have a terminal degree that basically shows I know my stuff to even be considered for those positions.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Of course, I found out afterwards that, and anybody listening who has a similar goal can keep this in mind. If you become a New York Times bestseller or win a bunch of awards, it doesn't matter if you have an MFA or not. Like the colleges will still hire you because you have walked the walk and have life experience that doesn't really compare to a classroom. So okay. I got this degree with the hopes that I could teach and, you know, kind of found out afterwards that it's like, well, it isn't super necessary if you can reach a certain level of fame, which I'm obviously not at yet. So
yeah. You'll get there.
I'll get there. I'm working on it.
Yeah. So I want to ask you, there are two in the series with the Treason Without Tea, right?
Yeah.
You call mm-hmm. that the Tomes and Tea series?
Yeah. So the Tomes and Tea Quartet is the first one. And it will be four books. So I've released books one and two. And then Tor stepped in and purchased the series. So books three and four are written, they're done, and they're in my publisher's hands, but they haven't been released yet. And there's no planned release date right now. I expect it will be sometime in early, I think book three will probably be out in early 2025, based on the fact that there's 5 months between books one and two. I expect there will be another 5 months between books two and three and another 5 months between books three and four. So we'll see.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have been busy.
Yeah, I published four novels last year and wrote five because one of the books was already written. So,
Wow. So that brings me to something. I read somewhere that you have this goal of writing 2,700 words per day. Is that right?
Yeah. So I will say that has shifted a little bit in the last year. Before this all started, that was my goal, was to write, you know, a decent chunk of words per day, as much as I could, you know, again, because I think that the best way to learn how to write is by writing and by getting feedback on your writing. Mm-hmm. So in my opinion, the best thing you can do for yourself if you're learning to write is to write a lot, even if it sucks. But I will say last year I fell into a different rhythm that kind of surprised me, where I can write a book very quickly, usually in the span of 3 to 6 weeks. But I usually will take another 3 to 6 weeks off in between those books to relax, recoup, work on marketing, kind of basically take over the business side of things rather than the writing side of things, the creative side. And throughout the business side, I'm usually mulling over what I'm going to write next. So by the time I'm ready to sit down at my computer and actually churn out another novel, I always have those five sentences ready. I've got ideas and vibes. I've got a Pinterest board. And I'm just kind of ready to get going at that point. So nowadays I write 5,000 to 10,000 words a day, but it's usually over 3 to 6 week chunks. And then I take breaks where I don't write at all for months. So
did I hear you correctly? Did you say you write a book in 3 to 6 weeks?
That is correct. Yes.
Ooh, that is.
Yes.
I think that is the fastest writing work that I've ever heard of.
Yeah, I read that book by Rachel Aaron. It's a craft book called 2K to 10K. So it's 2,000 words to 10,000 words a day, 2K to 10K by Rachel Aaron. And she talked a lot about different tips about how to amp up your writing ability. But I think the biggest barrier that kind of shattered for me last year was that I realized I physically could write 5 to 10,000 words a day. And there's a, you know, there was a barrier in my brain where everyone's like, that's so many words. But I was kind of like, well, if I sit down and I write it, you know, what, 130 words per minute or something like that, or 107 words per minute, like, when you write that fast and you're not holding yourself back by this sucks, I shouldn't be writing this, this is terrible, I shouldn't, you know, like once you let go of all of that and you just are like, okay, I'm just going to sit and write today and I'm going to judge it later. Suddenly you get the ability to write very, very quickly just because you're not critiquing yourself with every single sentence.
So you're just spewing it all out and then you go back and edit, maybe change things and rewrite things.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I have I'm a very analytical person. I don't know if you've noticed by now,
but a little bit.
Yeah. It's the ADHD. It's quite intense.
You have this whole formula.
Yeah. Yeah. So when I do, I have my rough draft, I send every chapter to my girlfriend, who is my alpha reader. Okay. And she reads every chapter and leaves comments on it, basically commenting on the flow of it, the character development, all that jazz. And I fix those comments as I write. And then at the end of it, I have a 4-pass-through editing method where I basically tackle, and this is also in that craft book. My first pass is always structural stuff. So I check the plot to make sure that it makes sense from start to finish, that the characters aren't magically appearing somewhere they shouldn't be, that there aren't any plot holes that I'm going to need to completely edit out or change, etc. Once the structure is done, I do a second pass through for character development to make sure that the romance feels, you know, legitimate, to make sure the characters feel like real people, all that jazz. Then I do a third pass through that is scene based. So I'll do chapter by chapter or scene by scene and make sure that every scene has a purpose inside the novel and that it's furthering the story at large. And then I do a fourth pass through that is sentence level structure edits. So that's like sentence level, you know, reorganizing, making sure I'm not using the same sentence structure over and over and over again. You know, when you have a sentence that starts with she said this, she said that, she did this, she did that, it gets a little repetitive for the reader.
Yep.
So that's my fourth pass. And by the time that's done, the book is really polished and ready to go to my editor. So
amazing. So you use the word, your girlfriend is your alpha reader. And I am accustomed to hearing people say that their first reader is their beta reader.
The definitions of these are a little wibbly wobbly.
Yeah.
I think it depends author to author. For me specifically, alpha readers are the first line readers that won't tell you it's terrible unless you explicitly tell them to tell you it's terrible.
what good girlfriend would do that?
Yeah, right. So like my girlfriend knows to comment on things, but she also knows that my creative, like when I'm writing, I'm in a very vulnerable place where if I get too much critique too quickly, I will just stop writing because I'll assume it's terrible.
Yes.
So she finds, and luckily, you know, she loves me. She finds that balance between, you know, offering suggestions in a comforting way and holding back certain comments until she knows the book is done so that I can tackle them after that point. Because once I'm in editing brain, I'm in let's strip it down to the bones brain. But when I'm in writing brain, it's like, no, don't hurt my baby.
Sure.
So I call those readers alpha readers because they have a very specific job and it's not the normal beta reading job. Like they're not looking for everything wrong with the book. They're looking to make sure that I continue to write creatively. Okay. And then I give it to beta readers and I usually choose 5 to 8 of those. And I actually find them these days on TikTok, which is very rare. A lot of people don't have the luxury of putting out a form and getting 100 people signing up to be a beta reader for one of my books. But I am at that point now. So I'm able to get, you know, I kind of choose based off of, demographics and, you know, their experience levels and their goals with the editing process. And I always send my beta readers a signed copy of the book when it's published. So they get payment basically in form of a physical signed copy that I send them. And I don't sign very many copies. So that's, you know, a lot of them are very excited for that.
Yeah.
And then I will usually move on if I'm self-releasing, I'll move on to an ARC reader thing where I'll open it up to 100 to 200 people and give them the book and then get feedback over the course of a month before the book releases. And that is kind of my process for editing in regards to self-publishing. So,
wow, that's crazy. I never heard of someone doing the ARC reader thing before. like?
Yeah, it's more common in the indie spheres. I mean, okay. Traditional publishers obviously definitely do advanced reader copies.
Yes.
But they have a more concentrated effort where they're looking for influencers. You know, they're looking for people and librarians and booksellers, people who have the ability to move books in the future. They deserve a book.
Yeah.
And I think for indie authors, it's a little more about the community of voracious readers that you can foster just by giving them a free novel.
Yeah.
Because a lot of indie authors are just getting started in their career, and it's very exciting for readers to find them when they're new and then get a hold of a copy before it ever came out, and then, you know, get to brag about it for years and years if they become big. So a lot of the original readers of Can't Spell Treason Without Tea still talk about how they were ARC readers for that book, you know,
that's
nice. Really cool to see. I mean, that's very flattering for me as an author. So.
Yeah, it's quite a compliment to you as an author.
It really is. I don't know. I mean, I've been doing this for years. I was in traditional publishing for 8 years before I pivoted into self-publishing and found that lightning strike. And I think it's exciting for people to look at, because I went through 300 rejections. I queried 3 novels before any of them got picked up by an agent. I had 2 more books die on submission. I mean, I've been writing for ages and I've been getting rejected for ages. So it's exciting for people to watch that kind of story turn around after many, many years of dedicated movement. But it's also exciting for me to know that people are finally reading my books, you know, that was something that I didn't really expect to happen ever. I just kept writing because I loved it. So it's really cool. This year's been great.
Yeah, I'll say that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. So, do you have like a favorite, like writing spot that you go to, for your daily 5Ks?
You know, I honestly write in my office more often than not these days. I used to have some really great coffee shops in the Phoenix Valley that I would go to, but over the last 5 to 8 years, a lot of them closed down, or they got crazy crowded, you know, like now I go and it used to be, I'd be the only one there for hours. And now I go and, you know, the ones that are still around are packed.
Yeah.
And it's hard to find a seat, and they're really loud and people are talking, and I love that kind of vibe, but to a point, you know, I don't want to hear people laughing like crazy 2 tables over when I'm trying to write a book. So,
So
I go to my local library a lot and I write there because it's quiet. Mm-hmm. And then I have a really nice home office set up now that I'm very lucky to have. So, and then I get to hang out with my dogs and have coffee and eat food and sit outside if I want to. So it's nice.
Very nice. So is writing your full-time gig, or do you have another profession as well?
I'm actually a flight attendant full-time.
Wow.
Yeah. So I've been doing it for 11 years. I'm about to hit my 10-year anniversary with Southwest Airlines in April, which is very cool.
Congratulations.
Thank you. There's a party in Dallas and I'm going to be flying out to it. So that'll be fun. They always host a party for the 10-year people. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah. And Southwest Airlines, I mean, they're the party airline. They know how to party.
So yeah, they do.
It's like wild. So that should be a lot of fun. So I've been doing that job for ages, and I'm just incredibly grateful for the life experiences and confidence it gave me, because you really have to know what you're doing on an airplane, and that gives me a lot of confidence in other avenues of my life to try things that would normally scare me. So
yeah, you really have to be in control of things, right?
Yeah. Well, and you have to be good at thinking on your feet. Mm-hmm. I will say like on and off the airplane, I'm not so good at it, but I'm getting better. But on the airplane, it's definitely, there was a lot of psychology that I had to learn about my job, just to learn how to subvert certain catastrophes, like if people are angry or upset on an airplane and you go at them with an empathetic approach and say like, well, tell me how your day's been, like what has been going on? Is there anything I can help with? Yep. Then all of a sudden they're not angry anymore. They're just like glad somebody's listening.
You're really just diffusing their anger.
Yeah. Just immediately diffuse it with a couple conversations. So it's been really helpful, I think, from a writing perspective, because one, it gives me a lot of character ideas because I meet so many people every day.
Yeah.
But it also gives me a lot of ability to handle the business side of things. You know, when I got on TikTok, it was not hard for me to start recording my face and talking about things because I already, stand up in front of a crowd and do the safety demonstration, you know?
Yeah,
so,
yeah, that's true. Yeah. So I imagine too, like you have a lot of time maybe in between flights. So that gives you time to write.
Yeah, definitely. I love doing those long haul flights, the, 3 to 5 hour flights, because you get to a point on those flights where people don't want to see you anymore. You know, like once they've gotten their first drink, they've gotten their second drink, they've turned in their trash, they've gotten some food, they're done. They don't want you walking by anymore. So at that point, it's easy to go up to the front galley and pull out the little desk we have up there and open my laptop and just write and write and write and write and write. So,
wow, that's wonderful. Yeah. And if you have long layovers, right, you're...
Yeah. I mean, sometimes, a lot of times I go out and do things, but I've been flying for so long now that I've done most of the things I'd wanted to do in most of the cities I've been to. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of nice to be able to go in and really just kind of dive into the writing side of things in a hotel. I mean, sometimes there's really nothing else to do.
Yeah. So who are some of your favorite sapphic writers?
Oh, Tamsin Muir. I still don't know what I read in Harrow, like Harrow the Ninth. I have no idea what that book is. So ridiculous. I loved it so much.
Yeah.
This Is How You Lose the Time War, Max Gladstone and, Amal L. Motar. I'm probably butchering that, but oh my God, that book was, I think I read that book even before the Nicholas Dickolas thing. I think I read that book twice a year just because it's,
really?
Wonderful.
Oh my goodness, that's great. I love it when you love a book so much that you read it so many times.
I can't stop. I that book is so creatively done and requires you to step so far back from what you're reading to think about the bigger picture in a way that most other books don't make me do. And I think that's why I liked Harrow too. Like I'm looking at this point, I think I really am attracted to fiction that is different and fresh, you know, and like Gideon the Ninth I loved, but then Harrow came over and it started using second person in a way that I was like, you can't get away with second person. That's crazy. No one writes in second person. Mm-hmm. And then she did. And then she pulled it together in the end. And I'm just like, oh my God, what is going on? Like, wild. So
Good. Yeah,
I mean I pretty much exclusively read lesbian fiction these days. And there's so many good ones coming out now. It's just honestly amazing. So
yeah, definitely. It is amazing. There are like tons of great books out there.
It's not much better than when I was young, you know. wasn't any, I think I read a single queer book until I was probably in my mid 20s.
Yeah, same here. Not enough time in the day though.
Yeah.
So here's a question for you. Tell us something about Rebecca that no one else may know. I'm putting you on the spot.
You know, I mean, my followers probably don't know this. My family definitely does. But I got my degree in criminal justice from the University of Arizona back in 2012. And I thought at that point I was going to go into the FBI. That was my goal, was to go into the FBI. And I had a potential for an interview for an internship over the summer, right before my senior year at the Hoover Building in Washington. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I was like ready to go. I was like, this is my new career. I'm going to do such a good job at this internship. They're going to give me a job at the end. It's going to be great. I'm going to get the specialist clearance and everything else. And I'll be just like those people you see on TV, right? The sexy female detectives, you know, doing this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I went in for the polygraph and I failed. And it was because they thought that I did drugs and serious crime, serious crime with the FBI is a very serious crime. Like, it's not just like petty theft, right? Like, that's like smuggling drugs across state lines kind of thing.
Seriously.
Know? Yeah, so they thought that I did hardcore drugs and serious crime, and it's because the polygraph responded, and I don't know, I still to this day, I don't know why I responded to those two questions, because I grew up in a very Mormon area. I didn't drink until I was 21. I had one frat party that I drank at 18, and then I was done until I was 21. I mean, like, I'm probably one of the most straight-laced people you've ever met, you know?
Mm. Well, polygraphs aren't reliable all the time, you know?
They are not. And the creator of them actually said to the FBI that they are not reliable, and he regrets inventing the machine, but they still use it in most law enforcement scenarios.
I know.
So I lost the internship because I wasn't able to, you know, clear the background check because they did the polygraph before they started interviewing my friends. And if they'd done it the other way around, they would have known. But they called me back for a second polygraph and I failed that one too because I was so nervous. And,
And that's what it's based on.
That was pretty much the end of my law enforcement career, which now I'm very grateful for. But back then was kind of a large devastation in my life.
Oh,
you know,
I'm
kind
sure.
of made me maybe take a look at my career path and be like, well, what do I want to do now? And that's when I started as flight attendant, because I was like, well, I guess I'll travel, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's disappointing. And you know, that's one of the things you learn in any criminal justice class is that the polygraph, right, is
I told my professor about it later, and he got very indignant on my behalf, because there's a reason they're not admissible in court, you know?
Yeah, so. Yeah. That's weird.
Interesting degree. I mean, I really enjoyed all my classes and stuff. I just, you know, that was the end of it. So.
Yeah. I have an undergrad in criminal justice as well.
Oh, nice. Yeah. It was, I mean, honestly, it was a fascinating learning about the court cases and the procedures. And then, like I said, in the last decade, I've been very grateful that I did not go into that field, because I don't think I would have lasted. So.
Yeah. Same here. I did not go into that field.
Yeah.
Wow. So that's awesome. Great.
Yeah.
So, Rebecca, do you have any parting words for our listeners today?
If you have a novel idea, write it, because we want to read it. You know, I feel like a lot of people get scared to write their novels, but you never know what could happen.
Yeah.
You could be doing an interview on a podcast 2 years later.
There you go. Yes, absolutely. So, I just want to kind of reiterate where folks can find you. On TikTok, you're Rebecca.Thorn, right?
Yes.
And that's Thorn with an E at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And Instagram is, was it Rebecca Thorn?
Rebecca Thorn Writes.
Thorn Writes.
And I have a website. It's currently being redone, but it's still active. And it'll be looking a lot prettier in the next month. That is RebeccaThorn.net. So.
Okay, RebeccaThorn.net. All right.
Yeah.
And we will look for Can't Spell Treason Without T. That will be published on May 7th in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
So listeners, check out that book. It's part of a quartet, actually.
It is. Yeah.
So.
Tamara Pierce style.
Yeah. That's great. That's awesome. Well, thank you for being with us today, Rebecca. It has been a pleasure.
It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, it's a pleasure talking to you. And that's all the time we have. I'm Anita Kelly, and thanks for joining. Let's talk about books, baby. And until next time, may your journey be lighthearted, peace be plenty, and be safe, folks.